everyone. It's good to be with you. We are delighted by your presence. And once again, we have several visitors who are with us this evening. And we're especially happy that you are here. And we want to invite you back at any and every opportunity. I want to direct your attention this evening as we begin to look at some things at what the Apostle Paul had to say in 2 Corinthians chapter 2. He makes a statement here as he's talking about Satan and about temptations that God allows Satan to bring upon us. And he says, so that no advantage would be taken of us by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. We are not ignorant of Satan's schemes. It seems to me that what Paul is talking about is that God in his word has revealed to us the kinds of ploys that Satan uses, the kinds of tendencies that, or traps, we might say, that we as human beings can fall into. And these are the kinds of traps that Satan wants us to fall into. And yet, Paul says we're not ignorant of those things. We should not be caught off guard by those things. And yet, I think sometimes we can be caught off guard by those things if we don't take a few minutes every now and then and talk about some of the schemes of Satan. So I want to talk with you tonight about a couple of schemes that I think Satan uses, and they really are things that are of two extremes, two different extreme attitudes or mindsets that people can have, and either of these two extremes can be a real detriment to us. So I want to talk with you for a few minutes about these. I want to suggest, first of all, that one extreme that we can go to in our attitude and our mindset is the extreme of overconfidence. Overconfidence when it comes to fighting sin. And if you stop and think about it, the person who is overconfident is a person who has, first of all, an exaggerated view of his or her strengths. And secondly, the overconfident person tends to minimize or ignore his or her weaknesses. And that's really true in every aspect of life wherein one might tend to be overconfident, excessively confident, overblown, exaggerated attitude about one's strengths and ignoring one's weaknesses. You've heard me say several times, and I've even been ridiculed by some from this pulpit for the fact that on Saturday I play football with these young guys. And I view it as my responsibility, a real duty I think I have, is to make sure that these guys don't get overconfident. And that's just my job. That's my role, to put them in their place. I didn't say I was good at it, but I just said that's my job. It does seem to me that with each and every passing year, I get slower and slower, and these guys get faster and faster. In fact, I'm beginning to feel much like they're the roadrunner, and I'm Wile E. Coyote, and you know, and it's just it's increasingly embarrassing. But somebody who is overconfident in athletics or in any aspect of life is somebody that thinks they're better than they really are. They think that their strengths are better. They think they're stronger and more adept at something than they really are. And that overconfident person is very likely to not have a good perception of their weaknesses. And that's what really happens, I think, to a lot of us when it comes to righteousness. Overconfidence in one's own righteousness. That's the scheme that the devil uses. In calling upon us to become overconfident about how good we are. And I want us to just be careful about that extreme. Paul said in Romans chapter 3 and verse 23, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And there's not a one of us that doesn't fit under that category of all in this verse. All of us are sinners. All of us have sinned, and we constantly fall short of the glory of God. In fact, John said in 1 John chapter 1, verses 6 through 10, if we say that we have no sin, we are deceiving ourselves, and the truth is not in us. And I'm not really sure that when John makes that statement that he's literally talking about a person who actually would claim, oh, I've never done anything wrong in my life. It seems to me that in the context, he's probably talking about a person who, in a more practical way, in an ordinary aspect of life, this person has an overblown sense of how faultless that he or she is. And what John is pointing out is we are inherently weak, and we're deceiving ourselves if we think that we just don't have any error in a particular situation or circumstance or moral rule or principle, that we're just flawless in that particular thing. We're probably deceiving ourselves, and the truth is not in us. And that's this exaggerated view of our strengths. In fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12, the Apostle Paul makes a statement that to me is always something that we need to keep in our minds. Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. And again, this is an extreme attitude, but it's one that can develop when we really have shown ourselves to be strong in various areas and we feel rather good about ourselves and we've overcome maybe some kind of temptation or we've done some good things for the Lord or we're engaged in various things that are good and right. Well, those things are wonderful, but if we're not careful, we're going to go to the extreme of overconfidence and exaggerating our strengths and making us think in our minds we're stronger than we really are. You know, sometimes we are astounded that that preacher or that elder that we've had such respect for so many years, we find out that there's been some glaring moral failing in that man's life. And we say, well, how could that happen? That man's been such a good person. He's such a good man. How could he fall like that? Well, you know how he could fall like that? Because he's been such a good man. Because there are so many good things about him, so many good strengths, and it's very easy to become overconfident and to think you're standing strong, and yet you just set yourself up for that fall. Sometimes when we are seemingly the strongest, that's when we can be the most vulnerable to certain temptations. And we need to be careful about that kind of thing. Overconfidence in one's own righteousness. Some people focus so much on their strengths that it allows them to ignore their weaknesses. I think I put an extra S in that word weakness there, so just overlook that if you will. But sometimes we, again, can look at the good things that we do, and it allows us in our minds to ignore things that need to be corrected and just kind of slide them away from our purview. I think this is a problem that the Pharisees especially displayed. I want to look with you for just a moment at what Jesus has to say in Luke chapter 18. As he's talking to the Jews of his day, so many of whom were so righteous-minded, so godly-minded, and yet this was the trap that they fell into. In Luke chapter 18, verse 11, the text says that the Pharisee, as Jesus tells this story, the Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I pay tithes of all that I get. And then Jesus contrasts that overconfident Pharisaical attitude with the attitude of the tax collector, and this was the tax collector's prayer. The text says, standing some distance away, he was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. And then Jesus then says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. I think sometimes we mischaracterize the Pharisees of Jesus' day. I think sometimes we think that the Pharisees of Jesus' day were just a bunch of religious charlatans who were trying to put on a good front and make people think they were real righteous, But behind closed doors, they were engaging in a whole bunch of immorality, and they were just absolute charlatans, absolute frauds. And I think sometimes we think that's what Jesus was pointing out when he talked about the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. I don't think that's it. And I think if we think that's it, it may cause us to not realize that the trap of the Pharisees can be our trap. I think what Jesus is talking about is the kind of hypocrisy where the Pharisees were doing all these good things, and they really were good things. And it gave everybody the impression that they are good and righteous people, but there were things in the Pharisees' hearts and attitudes that they were not addressing. And what allowed the Pharisees to feel justified in not addressing those sins in their life is that they were of a more hidden nature, and there were so many outward things the Pharisees did that were really good. It's that overconfidence, because you look at your strengths and then your weaknesses, areas that need correction, they just kind of get pushed aside. And that's what Jesus is talking about, I believe, with the Pharisees. I don't believe that the Pharisee in this account that Jesus gives here, I don't think he was lying when he said about how often he fasted, how often he prayed. I don't think that he was guilty of robbery and adultery and being a swindler and all that. I think he was being very absolutely honest and accurate in all of that, but there were other things about that man's life that were being ignored. And that's what you constantly see throughout the Gospels whenever Jesus is coming into conflict with the Pharisees. Folks, that can be our problem too. And you know why? Because everybody in this room is a good person. We're good people. We do a lot of good things. You're here tonight. Could be doing a lot of other things right now, but you're here worshiping God, which is great. But don't allow that. And don't allow other good things that you do or that I do, let's not allow that kind of thing to cause us to then shut an eye to other areas in our life that need correction. And that's one of those schemes the devil uses. He's real good at it. And we fall into that trap all the time if we're not careful. You know, Jesus is God's response to that kind of overconfidence. Because when you think about Jesus on the cross, as we talked about in this morning's lesson, God's great plan is that we do not atone for our own sins. We cannot atone for our own sins. We're not good enough. It took the precious blood of the Son of God to accomplish that. And when we recognize that, that'll keep us humble. It'll keep us from an over-exaggerated view of our strengths. And I'll tell you what it also will do, recognizing Jesus and his sacrifice on the cross, it will also give us more motivation to go ahead and be willing to do that self-examination and observe those areas of weakness that we'd like to just kind of gloss over with our good points. No, because Jesus died on the cross and because God is so willing to forgive us our sins, if we will just confess those sins, acknowledge those sins to Him, that ought to motivate us to be more willing to acknowledge. You know, if it was a circumstance where if we had any hidden sin in our life, there might be a chance God might not forgive that. It might be a tendency then to not want to examine and find and discover some of those things in our life that need correction. But God in Jesus Christ is always willing to pardon. And that should motivate us to go ahead and be willing to humbly acknowledge the sins that really are there and not allow the good things that we do to obscure our real weaknesses from view. So I hope we'll think about that kind of thing. Jesus is God's response to help us not be this overconfident person. But I said we're talking about two extremes. There's another extreme. The other extreme I want to discuss, and that is this extreme. Sometimes people have the very opposite of overconfidence. They have what I would call real despair. Despair about one's righteousness, despair about one's own weaknesses. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 7, the Apostle Paul was very concerned about this man at Corinth. Apparently, or at least I would think it's probable, that it's the incestuous man of 1 Corinthians chapter 5 who now has finally repented. But in any case, either that man or another one at Corinth, Paul's concerned that the Corinthians need to make sure that they reaffirm their love for that man, lest he be overcome by excessive sorrow. Sometimes we can so focus upon our sins and our weaknesses that we just despair about ever even being able to be forgiven, about ever being able to live righteously. And Paul was concerned that this man not be overcome with despair in regard to the sin in his life. Some people despair over their weaknesses and they despair over their sin, thinking God is never going to forgive them. And I've talked about this a lot in recent lessons. I'm not going to elaborate on it right now, but we need to understand that it doesn't matter what you and I have done or how egregious that sin is, God's willing to forgive. You had some in Corinth that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and following, who were guilty of all manner of immorality, adultery and fornication and lesbianism and all these kinds of things. And Paul says, such were some of you, but you were washed, but you were justified, but you were sanctified in Jesus Christ. God was willing to forgive any and every sin, even those horribly egregious sins. He was willing to forgive those sins as long as those people would turn from them. And so we don't ever need to despair that somehow God is unwilling to forgive us. But I'll tell you something else. Some people despair over their ability to live righteously. It isn't so much that the person thinks in his mind, God won't forgive me. But a lot of people just think, I can't do this. This Christian life, this life that all of you are living out here. I see you all at church. I see so many of these people at church. And they're leading these good moral lives. I can't do it. I'm too weak. And some people have such a lack of confidence in their ability to live righteously that they just despair over that. And they just basically throw up their hands and say, why even try? And I've had people tell me that. Flat out. I'd like to be able to live a Christian life. I just can't do it. What's the point of even trying? That's a scheme that Satan uses. That kind of despairing attitude. That extreme kind of self-deprecation that is toxic to a person and that causes a person to just give up and not even try. I want you to look at, or think with me, if you will, at what Paul says in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13. Paul makes this statement, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. That's a great statement. That's one of those refrigerator wisdom kind of statements. Just put that up there, tape it on your mirror, you know, in your bathroom or something every morning, see that, or put it in your car or whatever. That's one of those good statements. And it's true. But notice what Paul's statement really is saying. He's not saying, I can do all things. He's saying, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And what Paul recognized is that he wasn't able to do it, just him. He didn't have the ability, as Saul of Tarsus, to really live this Christian life and to endure the things that he had to endure. But that's the whole point. It was Christ who was living in him. It was Christ who was strengthening him. Christ was the one through whom Paul says, I can do all things. And that needs to be our attitude too. In fact, when a person says, well, I just can't live this Christian life.
Well, the real response to that should be, you know, you're exactly right. But God, through you, can do wonderful things. It's really not a matter of your ability, it's a matter of God's ability that we need to see as the real issue. Or look with me, if you will, just for a moment at this passage in Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 20. This is a great passage, another one of those refrigerator wisdom passages. But look carefully at what Paul says here. Ephesians 3 and verse 20. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us. Every part of that sentence is chock full of profound statement. Paul says there is a power, a divine power that is working in us. God is at work in us. And as a result of that, Paul says that he is able to do what we ask or what we think. You know, there are people who question whether or not their life circumstance is such and whether it's they themselves, I can't accomplish something here, or my situation, life, it's just one of despair and it's just a terrible kind of circumstance I'm in. What Paul wants us to see is that there is a God who does exist and who is at work. Now, all things depend upon his will, but nevertheless, he is the one who works, and he is the one who has the power, and he is able to do whatever we ask or even think. Really, Paul even says it a step more than that. It's not just that Paul says he's able to do what we ask or think. He says he's able to do beyond all that we ask or think. That's kind of interesting. The prayers that we offer, those things that we talk to God about, those things that we ask Him, God is able not only to accomplish those things, if it be His will, but God is able to even do beyond what we ask or even think might be the best way for things to go. But look at it carefully, He even goes beyond that. He doesn't just say that God is able to do beyond all that we ask or think. He says that God is able to do abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. Abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. That ought to give us some confidence and power, a sense of vigor about the things that we're able to do in this life as God is strengthening us. It ought to give us a sense of empowerment when it comes to living a righteous life. No, you on your own can't overcome all these temptations that have defeated you again and again and again. But God is able to empower you to overcome those temptations. If you will submit to Him totally through God's power, you are able to overcome those things because He is able to do abundantly beyond all that we ask or even think. It's pretty good, isn't it? But Paul really even takes it one step above even that. He says that he is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. Are you starting to get the impression that Paul's trying to emphasize something here? That so often we sell God short, and so often we sell ourselves short. And because we don't realize that God is able to do such wonderful things through us, we are able to overcome sin and temptation. We are able to persevere in this life. Don't you ever, ever, ever say that you can't endure the struggles that you're going through. God does not put us in a situation where we're tempted and tried beyond what we're able to bear. That's His promise. And God says that we are able to do, or He is able to do through us, far more abundantly beyond all that we ever ask or think. Tell you what, you can be a Christian, and you can be a strong Christian, and you can overcome those things in your life that have been weighing you down and holding you back. Yes, you can overcome those things, because God is at work in you. God is accomplishing these things with you. And that's the reason why we ought to be giving God the glory in all of our accomplishments, and not us, but give God the glory in all those things. Satan tries to scheme and entrap us with this lack of confidence, this despair. No. We need to have a balanced attitude. A balanced attitude, not overconfidence, not despair, but maybe we might call it a quiet confidence. That I am a Christian, and God is accomplishing great things in my life because I'm allowing Him to work through me. I'm submitting myself to His will. I'm doing it His way. And therefore, that means I'm worth something. I'm accomplishing something because God is at work in me to accomplish great things. And yet it doesn't allow me to be overconfident and somehow pat myself on the back and break my arm trying to pat myself on the back, because I realize I am inherently weak. It's only by the strength of God, it's only by the blood of His Son, that I can be forgiven of the sins that I commit. And so Jesus is the answer to both of these extremes, these ploys that Satan puts in our path. And it's that balanced kind of attitude, that quiet confidence that God wants us to have as children of Jesus Christ. And if we will realize that, and if we will look to Jesus, the one who died on the cross for us, the one who is our King and our source of power even now, if we will look to Him, then we can have that balanced attitude, that quiet confidence that allows us to persevere and to grow and accomplish great things while we're still here in this earthly life. And I hope you'll think about those things tonight. Is there someone tonight who needs to respond in some way to the gospel of Jesus? Can we assist you in that? Allow God to work great things in you by submitting yourself to Him and turn your life over to Him, and He'll forgive you of every sin, and He'll accomplish great things through you. Won't you come, whatever be your need, while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement.